In this episode of the Neil Wilkins podcast, I am joined again. I think you've now got the record, Kate, for the most number of appearances on the Neil Wilkins podcast by three times. And this is actually your third time, but this is a three-time world record-breaking, plant-based, well, miracle, really, I would say, Kate. I mean, Kate achieves things that you will only dream about and never do. But maybe that isn't true. And I'm going to explore with Kate the concept as we go into this conversation of resilience, because I couldn't think, when I was looking at this as a topic, I couldn't think of anybody else who demonstrates in a really kind of practical, real world sense the concept of resilience more than Kate. I literally don't know anybody else who can do this. So I wanted to go deep into some of these world record attempts and some of these world record achievements to kind of find out from somebody who really has lived and breathed and, yeah, had tears and pain all the way through some of these exploits, what it's actually really like to be properly resilient. Because I think for the rest of us mere mortals, there is an opportunity here to kind of learn skills, tips and techniques, you know, just kind of ways of finding for ourselves what a natural kind of resilient balance is. So welcome back, Kate.
Thank you, Neil. And yeah, I'm very happy to hear that I've broken yet another record today.
Yeah, this one's not quite as impressive as the previous ones you've done, though. But hey, more records, you know, you can add this one to your CV. Yes, no, I don't think you'll be doing that. So for the people who haven't seen the previous sort of two sessions that we've recorded, give a little bit of a sense of who Kate Strong is.
Gosh, where do I start? I suppose from the outset, I'm Welsh. I'm turning 44 next month. I now live in a house here in London, but that's a new feature from 3 weeks ago. I'm very nomadic. I'm deeply connected to a spiritual path, and I use quite a lot of intuition to guide me. So the how, or the labels people know me as, is a world champion triathlete, 3 times world record holder in cycling. I also have 2 masters in engineering and mechanical engineering, which I got from France. So I speak fluent French and Spanish as well. And I'm a nomad at heart. So I love traveling, exploring different cultures and communities. I've set up micro businesses in Vietnam as well as Central America and Guatemala. And yeah, just reconnecting to what it means to be human on many levels.
And so now for the rest of us now feeling completely inferior to that CV, which kind of for most people, that would be like 5 individual people's CVs all kind of combined into one. We're going to get into the concept of resilience, because this is just for me a fascinating topic. I mean, as you know, Kate, you know, I've been exploring kind of mindfulness and kind of a lot of these kind of sort of holistic themes and trends for quite some time, and trying to kind of figure out ways of maybe introducing and just sort of drip feeding these into people in a commercial sense in business life, and particularly for marketers, some of the best kind of bits of kind of describe it as our world, but you know, the way that we kind of think about stuff, which is possibly a little bit different and not particularly sort of mainstream. But when it comes to breaking world records, I mean, this is something that is way beyond the kind of, I guess, the aspirations and dreams of most people. Just before we start getting into kind of the deep sort of psychology behind resilience, is like, where does your drive come from? Because it's got to be just almost insatiable, surely.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think I was born with it, because I remember from very early on, I have memories from when I was 1 or 2 years old, which is exceptionally rare. So there's some, not that I'm saying I'm special on that level, but I think there was something in me to constantly want more from a very early age. My biggest driver memory, which has fed me to this day, I was about 10 years old, and I remember seeing an advert on television around some children that were starving in an African country. And it really impacted me to know that they were suffering outside where I had been sheltered from ever seeing that. And that sort of decided that I would make sure my impact was always to the positive of others, or the least minimized. So that decision continually drives me to this day to make sure that what I do is it sounds heavily cliched, but the cliches work, but it was for a greater good. You know, how can I make sure that whatever I do leaves somebody else feeling better, more empowered, more aware, whatever that might be? So that drive seems to be throughout that. So layer that on top of all my sporting achievements. The world championships was heavily selfish, but it fed that question in me, like, what can Kate Strong achieve if I stopped feeding the excuses or the justifications or the reasons or listening to others? Like, what if I actually just gave it my all? And the world records, because there were world records for men, but not women. So my drive was, how can I, in a positive way, highlight the importance of equality using my sport? So, you know, I can push through the physical pain barrier more than other areas. I use that sport to challenge those questions. But it's always to leave a positive impact or ripple, if you want, in the people that are directly linked to whatever I'm doing.
I want to come back in a minute. That phrase that you just used there, feeding the excuses, that there's something quite profound in that one. It's quite simple, but actually, don't we all do that? I'm sure people listening to this think, yeah, I procrastinate. Yeah, I've got some real issues with that one. I kind of got all these dreams, but they're only ever going to be dreams because I never put any goals against them. And I kind of, there's always a reason why I can't. I mean, I'll do it tomorrow, kind of manana, but it's never really going to happen. So I want to come back to that because I think that's one of these fundamental little elements of why you are so resilient and achieve a lot. But I want to explore that. But you've got an upcoming challenge that I want people to be aware of, because this kind of whole giving back thing, it's got a whole momentum of itself now, hasn't it? It's almost like everything that you're doing now seems to have this greater purpose. And so what's the next one? What's the big one coming up?
Yeah, so on the 5th June this year, so only a few months away, quite shockingly, I'm cycling 3,000 miles around mainland Britain on a cycle I'm calling Climate Cycle. I'm connecting 30 different projects and communities along the way, where I'm going to be exploring to them how they're working together to make the world a better place. So most of the projects will be around the climate, but ultimately it's also to reduce the cost of living, because weirdly enough, if we protect our mother nature, if we protect our food systems, if we look after the energy consumption, we're also saving a little bit of money along the way. So 3 months I'll be cycling along my bamboo bike. I've also pledged to fund 3,000 trees to be planted. So anyone who joins me in the cycle will be rewarded with a tree. So hopefully it will break that inertia. They might just do a 5-mile cycle, knowing that they've got a tree and they'll be on the Kate Strong tree ward pledge. So yeah, it's very exciting, but also quite nerve-wracking, because as I'm sure you appreciate, 3,000 miles, there's a lot of logistical planning to go behind that. And again, finding the right projects to visit along the way to make sure that every community gets an open space to share, rather than just ones that are big, well-known as well.
I mean, 3,000 miles obviously has a wow factor to it. But the thing that for me as a cyclist as well, I'm just thinking, bamboo bike? I have to ask. Tell me more.
Again, I love that I just come up with these crazy ideas and don't think them through before doing them. But I just thought, well, is there a way of making my bike greener than just literally painting, you know, greenwashing a steel bike? And I found a supplier of handmade bamboo frames from Ghana. I originally built my own bamboo bike frame out of 6 pieces of bamboo, but my bike manufacturing skills aren't as good as they should be, so it's unridable. So I've imported a handmade bamboo bike. But the message behind it is, we can't, as a society, keep doing the same thing a little bit better. What if we looked at every aspect of our life and deconstructed it to ground zero almost, and went, where can we do better and what materials can we use? My bike is just as friendly to ride, because the components are just like every other bike. It's actually carbon positive. I've pulled carbon and locked it into my frame versus releasing it. So I think it's also a sign to business and individuals to say, let's just stop like taking half a day a week off for our mental health. What if we reimagined completely the structure of business? How would I be functioning within that? How would I respect my ebbs and flows of the day, week and year cycles, and make sure that I'm productive, but also living in harmony? So the bike has a deeper meaning as well, rather than just a, you know, a pretty frame as I'm cycling along, to ask, to inspire people into questions about what I'm doing.
I was going to say, this is really kind of opening a conversation on so many levels, isn't it? It's not just a, we'll say just, I mean, come on, Neil, I shouldn't use the word just with Kate, but it's not just 3,000 miles, you know, with lots of trees and some projects. It kind of really, this, the whole idea behind this is really getting people talking, getting people active, getting people, you know, making a difference and actually changing. I think you are really all about change, aren't you? You wouldn't be somebody, I guess, has ever really sort of stood still at any point in anything that you've done. Is change kind of one of these things that you really, you know, it fuels you?
I think so. It's one thing, it's inevitable. We cannot escape change. We will change over time because we age. We will change our preferences because it's an evolution. So change is part of our life. Yet for some reason, society as it currently stands, and us ourselves as well, are very resistant to change. You know, I remember my father when I went to university. His vision for me was to get that safe, secure job in engineering, and not change for 40 years. Because that's what he did and it worked for him. That's what his parents did, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not natural. We are creatures of nature. Change needs to be embraced, even though we have a natural resistance or aversion to it. So I suppose I embraced it because I know that's my weak spot. I do like my comfort zone. I do like not doing things. But I also know magic doesn't happen when we don't change. So push myself, keep growing, and these beautiful podcasts and conversations with you, Neil, reminds me and also get that little bit of public accountability to make sure I keep doing what I'm saying I'm going to do.
Yeah, and it just kind of, it keeps people inspired and motivated, and then I guess always on the lookout for, you know, what's next with Kate, because it is a story that once you kind of buy into this, everyone listening to this, is if you follow Kate, you follow Kate's, you know, projects and stuff like I do, since, you know, I was introduced to you sort of a few years ago, you can't not look, you can't not be curious, you can't not be inspired by it. It's just such an interesting kind of angle here. Is what drives you then? Is it, do you feel it kind of, it comes from sort of within you, or is it seeing the reactions of other people and hearing the kind of the words, like the words I'm saying here, because we are really impressed by you and what you do. Is it a balance between the two? Is it kind of internal, where you don't actually really need it, it's just nice? Or is it kind of from an external sense, that's what fuels?
Yeah, thank you for the kind words as well. It is a balance between the two, just like an aeroplane flying. It's always a little bit off course, one side or the other side. We don't, you know, sometimes it's for others, other times it's for me. I do my best to be intrinsically motivated because it doesn't depend on others. And then when I get somebody who criticizes or doesn't get what I'm saying or thinks that, you know, what I'm doing is wrong or has a negative opinion, I'm attached to that. So I do my best to know that I'm doing it for myself. Selfishly, the climate cycle is for me. Yes, there is that altruistic connection of community, and I'm creating a documentary about it, and I'm going to be sharing as much as I can about these communities so we can all learn together. But for me, I need hope. I need to reignite that connection with other humans, because I'm not sure if this resonates with you, but through lockdown, I started to really question what on earth are we humans doing? Like we're struggling to look after ourselves, let alone our community, let alone the planet as a whole. And the numbers aren't showing that they've improved. So I started to really sort of have doubt in our society. And the trip is for me to get hope again, to know that when the days I feel alone are present, I'm not really. They may not be next to me, but there is someone out there in the world doing something good. So I can take a day off, knowing that, you know, someone else will pick that baton up. So yeah, the motivation should come within, but those positive messages, having emails or someone reaching out or joining me on the bike ride, definitely picks my spirits, knowing that I'm not just talking into a little vortex of Kate Strong.
Yeah, and I suppose I think you probably hit the nail on the head there, haven't you, in terms of it's a balance. So some days you're going to feel like, no, I'm totally, it's all about me. I'm driven. It's all about, you know, my journey. I'm choreographing this, etc. And other days it's like, do you know, I'm feeling actually quite vulnerable here because of either physicality, because I'm 2,500 miles into the journey or whatever it happens to be. And then it's almost like you give the permission for others to kind of take care of you. Was that something when you've, I'm just thinking now about the kind of the records and particularly the record rides that you've done. I guess it is that balance between the two. So resilience kind of comes, yes, from within. I think most people identify that, you know, I've got to be strong sort of from within. But it is a collaborative thing, isn't it, here? Because you always have a team kind of around you. You always have supporters and people there to kind of be monitoring, you know, your well-being as part of something which is a very extreme physical thing to go through. So kind of, I guess it is a balance, isn't it? You get what you need, you take what you need, you use what you need at certain points. Is it, I mean, are we kind of starting to define resilience here in this way?
Yeah, it's worth noting that Climate Cycle is the first ever sporting event I've done that has been paid for. Everything else was self-funded. Everything else was supported by volunteers. So it's not that, you know, once you become a champion or start a journey like that, suddenly there's a team appears in front of you or money comes and you can afford that PT. It isn't. It's a hard graph along the way. The greatest example I can visualize is actually during my triathlon years, because when I first came out and said I want to be a world champion triathlete, I lived in a village of 2,000 in Australia, and everyone laughed at me because I could barely run a mile. I had asthma back then as well, and you know they couldn't believe that this Welsh asthmatic, almost anemic looking girl would ever be anything more than a plodder up and down the street. But every day I went running, and every day people would step out of their shops and just watch me, first humorously. And then after 4 months, 6 months, 8 months, when I became national champion, they suddenly went, wow, you know, she's got something and she's not giving up. That's when they started to support me. So my last ride ever before the village crowdfunded and paid for my tickets to go to world championships in China, so I couldn't afford to go or pay for someone to run my business. They supported them. They got together and supported me so I could leave my business for a week. My last run, I was just super tired. I'd cycled for 6.5 hours. It was pitch black. I had my head torch on, and where I used to run was up and down a railway track, and it was quite rocky. It was quite rocky and I couldn't really see and I was stumbling, but I knew I had to get the miles in. And suddenly behind me, I could see a light. So, you know, suddenly I could start seeing more and more. And one or two of my friends had come out on their bicycles with their torches to shine light on my path. And I thought, what a beautiful metaphor that I was the first one to light the flame of possibility in the village, and most people were laughing. But when my light started to dim, they came with theirs and kept it burning, you know, and it was just this beautiful completion for me. Regardless what happened in China, which is, you know, the race I won, I knew that my job there had been done because others were embracing their own light enough to be able to share it with me and other people in the village. So it was just a beautiful circle, but I never asked anyone for money, but they always were inspired by why I was doing it and how I turned up every day. And that's when people started to get involved.
There's a certain
intrigue. Just completely waffled.
But there's a certain intrigue about the journey, though, isn't there? I think what I was picking up from that is that in so many ways, and again, coming back to this concept of resilience, it is about just really understanding the journey, that it is going to be ebbing and flowing. I think, you know, when, you know, some of the challenges that you've done, which are kind of, you know, immense physical feats, I think a lot of people who don't really stop and think about the detail would assume it is at a constant high kind of level, or it's at a constant high pace, but it actually isn't, is it? This is going to ebb and flow both physically, emotionally, mentally, the amount of support you're getting or needing or not wanting. Just it's a whole cauldron of different things going on, isn't it? I mean, explain a little bit about the kind of, you know, in those sort of rides and stuff, how, what kind of psychology are you going through?
Well, let's take the world's records as an example, because that was 24 hours on a bike. I started at 30 minutes. And so I started at a number which I thought was possible. I hadn't been training for a few years, so anything more than half an hour was too stressful to consider. So the resilience was built up gradually over time. I could visualize me cycling for 30 minutes three times a week. I could imagine it fitting into my diary. I could imagine everything else still working around it. And gradually over time, I grew it to 8 or 9 hours. I just didn't stop the growth where people might have stopped, say, 2 or 3 hours. So I got that nine hour a day cycle to be able to attempt the 24 hours. But resilience is just like filling a glass of water with a drop. You just put a drop in every day and the glass will be full before you even know about it, and overflowing as well. So it's the hardest thing is the consistency, and that's the muscle most people don't work. You know, we jump into the gym or we start writing our book with an 8 hour retreat and then nothing versus 5 minutes a day. And even emotionally connecting to that goal, be it the book or the race or whatever you want to do, it's that daily changing it from fearful to grateful and bringing it into our life and wanting to do it. So it's no longer a have to, it's that I'm looking forward to that moment when I can sit down and do what I said I wanted to do.
You hear and read a lot about kind of ultra marathon runners, for example, kind of literally just taking that next step. And it feels like this whole sort of resilience thing, the whole kind of mindset thing is, yes, it's amazing having this really ambitious kind of end of the journey goal. But actually the goal, from the way you're talking about this, is the goal is just to get to the next step. Because if you don't get to the next step, you are not going to get to the end goal. And it kind of sounds, again, as you said, you know, a bit cliche, but it's not, is it? It really is that, isn't it? It's the good habits come from the most simple little elements of that journey. Because I guess you don't know in that next step how it's going to feel. Because there is, a lot of uncertainty. When you're cycling through 24 hours, your mind goes to very strange places. I know this from experience. I haven't done the world record like you have, but I've ridden for 24 hours and it is bizarre. And it's almost like you can't vision it. If you're a very kind of visual person, you will have visioned it before you manifested it, before you then started your training, et cetera, et cetera. So I know that's how you will have done that. But what is it about this next step thing? Because there must have been steps in those various journeys that you've taken there where you literally thought, I might have to stop. It just might be too much. How do you, in that moment of, I can't do that next step, how do you do the next step?
Such a good question, isn't it? And if there was one answer, I'd be, well, in theory, a very rich woman. With the cycle, there was a point, it was after 8 hours, I'd never cycled more than 8.5 hours. So I was stepping into unknown territory. On a static bicycle, there's a lot more friction that's created than on a normal road bike, because I just didn't move. So sorry to be a little bit detailed, but I had actually broken the skin where I'd been chafing on my body, to the point where I had a cut about an inch long each side of my leg, where at one micro break my physio was gluing it together with glue from the local hardware store to enable me to carry on cycling. And I wanted to give up because I was bleeding, I was crying from the pain. My gut also stopped digesting. We were testing how much fiber I could absorb, and she was massaging my stomach to actually activate it, because my stomach was growing to the point of immense pain as well. I just couldn't move through my bowels and intestines. So she had to physically move the food through massage as well. So pretty much my body was shutting down physically. One thing in that moment that got me through was, imagine if how far can I push myself? Because I know I'm not going to die eventually. I'm not going to die because my stomach won't digest. It just means I'm going to be in a little bit of gut pain for a while. I know I can't die from a cut, not in England, and not the cuts that I was sustaining. So I wasn't risking my life, but I was just risking how far I wanted to stop. You know, we stop when we think we're going to die from dehydration. We won't. Our body will pass out before it allows us to die from dehydration, to store it. We want to survive and live. So even with my body pulling in the pain into me, so I had a lot to think about, as in, you know, parts of my body were screaming for attention. I tried to at best, and it was a flicker. It wasn't constant, but it would, just for a moment, I'd pull myself out and go, as an observer, how far can I take this pain? Because if my 10 out of 10 is this today, when I'm sitting on open rooms and cycling, if I stretch it a minute, my 10 out of 10 will be this for pain and thresholds. So I just started to get curious in how much more can I take? And it lasted from, as I said, 10 seconds at the most, because then the pain would overwhelm me. And then another tool I'd say is, okay, I've heard about people being able to control their bodies. What if I put immense pressure on my finger with my nail and I invite all the pain to go into my finger? Will that reduce the pain elsewhere? So I try that for 3 or 4 seconds, and it might work. It might distract me and work for 20 seconds. But before I knew it, 5 minutes was gone. And before I knew it, then the pain medication I took had kicked in. So the 10 out of 10 was actually an 8 out of 10. And I was like, oh, this is actually quite pleasant. So I can cycle until it's 9, because my 8 out of 10 was comparatively easier. So I just started to get curious as an observer in how far can I push it. We are sentient beings having a human experience. So this body will one point end. There will be no breath in this. I will have no more physical connection. And regardless of the religion or belief we hold, what happens to that consciousness elsewise afterwards is a new phenomenon and a new experience. That word change comes in again. So if I could look at my body as purely a vehicle, so just like we would with a car or a bicycle, certain elements are screaming and needing attention, like oiling or adding more fuel, but I'm not going to throw away my life or stop the journey just because my car stops. I'll look at other ways of adapting it. So I start to see my body as that sort of observed experience. How far can I push it before I really have to change it? And we know I'm not going to change it in just the cycle.
This is really interesting. It's the real kind of counter view to the view I would have guessed I would have had from, you know, prior to this conversation, because I would have thought you would say, well, actually, all I did is I kind of put my mindset on the goal, the end goal of I am going to do this, I am going to achieve this, and kind of a more kind of strategic view. Was actually what you did was you got super forensic over the moment, in that moment of, can I deal with this little tiny little detail? Can I manage that? And then when I have managed that, I'm going to then manage the next one, and so on and so on. So had you completely lost view of the big picture that I could be a world record holder at the end of this, was that kind of not even in your sort of, you know, visible horizon, as it were, at that point? Because it sounds like you'd gone so inward in terms of self-reflection and analysis at that point.
Yeah, I had a team of over 20 volunteers supporting me. And what we agreed, all the analysis, all that logic was done beforehand. So we knew exactly what I needed to reach every hour to break the 1 hour old record in the first hour, break the 12 hour records in the 12th hour, and then continue onwards to the 24th hour world record. So all I needed every hour was what I needed to accomplish for that 60 minutes. So on the hour, somebody would come with a post note, and they'd just stick it on the screen in front of me, because it was also live streamed. So there was a Facebook channel going, and they'd write cycle 23 miles or cover that much distance, or however they wanted to talk to me about. And that's all I'd focus on. So when I was in the elements of pain, especially in the like the 13th, 14th hour, because it's brilliant knowing I've only got 12 hours to cycle for the first or the second record. After that, the next 12 hours, and it was in the middle of the night as well, felt a little further. We broke it down to 5 minutes. So I had to really pull back that 1 hour. So I never thought about the world records. The team behind the scenes would say, if for 5 minutes she's able to cycle this distance, then we're still on track. Because I was desperate to get off the bike. Like if they asked me to cycle an hour, I was like, no, I need a break. I can't do that. So they said, fine. Can you imagine 30 minutes? No, I can't imagine that. 10, you know, and so that's why it was five. I could imagine 5 minutes. And at the end of that, they said, we'll ask you if you want a break, that you have to cycle 5 minutes. And typically I'd say no. So we'd cycle another 5 minutes. But my mindset could not imagine. I was in no way positioned to think of myself as record breaker because I was in so much pain and struggling so much. So yeah, we micro detailed it to that moment where I didn't have to think of the records, just getting through the next 5 minutes.
So anybody listening to this thinking, oh, well, project management doesn't really have much value, I much prefer kind of going with the flow. You ain't going to break any world records by the sound of it doing that way. That's a lot of post-it notes too, isn't it? The dedication of the team around you, kind of keeping your kind of mindset focused, but also adapting to, you know, the changes that clearly and the unpredictability of what you were going through, because there must have been moments where the emotions were just, well, I can remember seeing them, you know, on sort of one of your sort of, you know, later hours, I'm guessing it was. It looked absolute carnage. I mean, it really looked more than difficult. It was actually uncomfortable to watch because it looked so unpleasant. And yet you were still going.
What is curious is, and again, science is slowly, you know, proving this now with data and tests, but we hold a lot of emotions in our bodies. So I'm hyperflexible, which means that instead of like, I sort of lock certain parts of my body rather than trusting the muscles, because I can just bend until it stops. So I was locking my lower back, which is just below my tummy button. And that's also where we carry a lot of emotions around family. And I have a strange relationship with my brother. And throughout that cycle, he kept coming to mind. And I was crying and mourning for the relationship I don't have with somebody who I care deeply about and had beautiful fond memories of growing up with. And my physio was kept massaging that element, and she said, you will not unlock your muscles until you let go of the grief you're holding. So she said, have a moment, like this is all on the bike as well, but keep cycling, don't stop, but have a moment and cry and mourn the loss of that relationship, because you are not able to continue physically unless you release that emotional pain. And that's what I did. So I was heaving and gasping and like really letting it all out. And then I started to feel the release in my body. So the journey opened up amazing connection with the trauma that I'm still carrying in me, and also where I can still carry on my healing path off the bike. So yeah, there's huge connections with our emotional state and our physical well-being and our physical potential as well.
Now you've described that, yeah, it makes total sense, because if anybody ever sees the recording of that video, you'll know where I was a bit, oh, this is really uncomfortable viewing, because to see somebody going through so much obvious pain, but with the assumption that, well, it's the physical pain because of the distance and the time, whereas actually there was so much more, I guess, unpredictability around it, because you can plan, as we know in business, you know, you can plan to the nth degree. But what happens when that unplanned little moment happens, or a little bit of a mini disaster happens, and you know, you've got to then adapt and you've got to then sort of accommodate that within the plans. And everybody needs to go to either plan B to continue on that journey. It gets complicated, doesn't it? And I think if you don't have necessarily a preference for planning, and a lot of people, as I said earlier, are very much based around a spontaneity kind of preference, they'd rather not plan, just kind of wait and see what happens. It would be very, very difficult, I think, to just have to ebb and flow at this kind of level without any kind of predictability. Because I guess what you were trying to do was make the scenario and whatever might possibly happen to as best you could predictable, because then you knew where you were going to be at certain points in that journey. I mean, do you kind of advocate that for, I guess, most life kind of things, you know, work and play? Is that a good way of living, do you feel?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm obviously very biased because this is what I do. But bringing it back with what you said about business, when we set that North Star or that high target, the Everest for our business, deconstructing all those elements of what if this happens, what if that happens, and then upskilling in those tools doesn't mean we have to use them, but it does mean we feel more resourceful whatever happens in the future, even if it isn't one of the 101 what ifs that we think about. We know there's always a way to find a solution. So it again works that mindset of it doesn't matter what happens, but I know I'll find a way. But we can only do that through that deliberate practice at the beginning. So we do need that high goal. We also need to then give our, you know, what you call it, lizard brain, the place of fear that wants to keep us safe and small, ability to say, well, what if, you know, all the eventualities that could happen, so we can let it know that we've got us back, we're not going to let anything too bad happen, but we can keep pushing through it.
And I suppose for me, one of the things here is, I mean, I know it's all on a spectrum, you know, I mean, not everybody listening to this, and me included, are going to be breaking world records anytime soon, but it kind of is to our own sort of personal level of success, however we define that. I guess this can be taught, this stuff, can't it? I mean, clearly it's in your DNA for that kind of 1 and 2 year old Kate, you know, to be kind of reacting to the world in the way that you did back then. Clearly means that you kind of possibly are made a little differently to the average person. But if we talk about the average person, I'll put myself in this category, is like, we can learn these skills, can't we? We can learn this mindset, you know, having an aspiration, setting a smart goal, planning those steps, you know, taking those little kind of step-by-step sort of, you know, progress sort of measures, if you like, on the journey. We can all kind of learn how to do this. This isn't something that's just for a few blessed few, is it?
No, 100%. I remember saying just last week, I do a little bit of coaching on the side with individuals. And I said to one person, put yourself in a space of vulnerability. Just ask someone where is the local bus, or ask someone what the time is, and be open to not knowing. So don't go in there knowing you can find the way in your back pocket. Put your future in someone else's hands, however small. It may not look directly linked to then achieving your world records or whatever goal you may set is quite big, but that little work of being able to not feed the egoic I, individual, I'll do everything alone, but feeding that self, that connection, that resourceful aspect of ourselves, that daily asking someone for help or asking someone a question can really help in those moments when we're feeling stressed and striving for something bigger.
Yeah, and I think that's, to me, that's just such sage advice. I think it just, you know, that's kind of where you'd begin if you're kind of thinking about this. I need to be more resilient, and I need to kind of make progress, and I need to kind of, you know, be able to begin manifesting all those things that I call them dreams, but actually, you know, I need to kind of make them into plans. It feels that, you know, that is the way to kind of, you know, take these next steps. Whoever's listening to this, you know, we've all got, you know, dreams and aspirations, and whatever kind of level you want to kind of push yourself to, it feels like that's the way to kind of, you know, make those, you know, those first gains. And you've got to get started, haven't you? And it is about vulnerability as well. It is kind of, I guess I find as well, filling the weaknesses. You don't necessarily have to be perfect and strong at everything. It's kind of almost filling those spaces with experts. I mean, you talk about your physio there. You know, what would you have done without the physio? Because you wouldn't have worked that bit out in isolation, would you? So, I mean, do you advocate, you know, surrounding yourself with experts and specialists? I'm guessing you must do from, you know, the experiences you've had.
Yes, at the moment though, I'm doing a lot of deep work in spirituality, as you know, that's a big part of my life. So I do have a spiritual guide, mentor, however you want to describe it. Typically I do, but I find every one of us has amazing life experiences we can all learn from. So I am connecting with my friends who may not be physios or experts, but they bring passion into their life. I have a friend who's a single mother, and I adore hearing her daily routine with her children, because there is immense resilience and discipline and focus and love within that I can take on my journey around the Britain and my climate cycle. So every one of us has that knowledge, that golden piece of knowledge that we can all learn from. It's up to me to see it. So I don't necessarily have those like self-proclaimed experts and titled people. That I have a bank of individuals who are up to things in their life that inspires me.
It feels so accessible. It doesn't feel that, even though you're a world record holder, it doesn't feel like this is almost like you then become like an elite that, you know, is just, oh, it's untouchable. We couldn't possibly do that for ourselves. You're kind of talking as though this is a very accessible thing for everybody, which feels so refreshing. I think there's probably quite a bit of misinformation around that kind of sort of position of this. I mean, it does feel like anybody can do this stuff. Okay, maybe not break world records necessarily, although who's to say, but at least you can kind of surround yourself by, you know, trusted others, and you can make gains in your life. And that feels like an amazing thing.
I've never been 44 before. I'm still, a girl working out life and struggling. There are elements of my life where I don't know what I'm doing. I still some very rarely, but I still sometimes go to bed at night quite upset and cry. I'm confused. Like my partner and I at the moment are uncoupling, for want of a better word. I'm left struggling, understanding why that's happened. So even with world records, I'm still a human being, and there are some aspects that I can work through quicker. But I'm also getting a lot of life where I'm left remembering this philosophy of, you know, to climb a tree, sometimes we have to climb down a branch to be able to climb higher. The climbing down sucks, and it sucks for everyone. It doesn't matter what your resume said, or don't you know who I was? Who I am today is someone who is questioning a little bit and doesn't know the future as well. I'm lucky that I have that climate cycle. That's keeping me focused, pushing me through. I also created it, but yeah, I do still have moments where I am a human being at the end of the day. I don't advocate for anyone to be put on a pedestal. It's very unhealthy, because we're giving away part of our power to someone else, but also that individual has a lot further to fall if and ever they stumble themselves.
That's wise words, and thank you so much, Kate, for your vulnerability there, because that's a really honest thing. I think that will bring so much value to people, because, you know, with a conversation like this, it could go in the whole kind of, oh yeah, I know I am kind of thing. I know it never would with you, because it's not who you are. But, you know, some people might bask in the glory of their achievements. And, you know, there is a human kind of element there that ego says, yeah, go on, just for 5 minutes, go on, enjoy it. Whereas actually it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like you need that, because it's kind of like, yeah, I've done it, I'm proud of it, but on to the next challenge. And that feels a really healthy way to be part of this journey, this constant fueling for, hey, what's next? Feels like there's a real thirst for just constantly exploring. You're never going to stop this, are you?
No. Well, there will be a day, but I'm not going to choose that to happen anytime soon. But yeah, every day is an exploration. And think about a child, they wake up at five-year-old, they jump out of bed. Oh my gosh, another day of exploration. What can I learn? Who will I meet? What will I see? Look at this tree. Look at this leaf. I wonder where it came from. Hello, little puppy dog, when I'm walking down the street. Imagine if we had that attitude every day. know, that is a hunger for life. You know, I love seeing children interact with the world because they have this hunger for continuation. We should be like that. We've never been here before. We've never been this age at this time of life in this type of climate before. Now is the time to be curious and not be resigned and predictable. You know, I know the roots of my work. I've done it 100 times, but I bet you haven't seen it on a day like today. What can you find today that's different? It's up to us to find that curiosity and spark that life and a desire to explore and see what else.
I cannot believe that anybody listening to this, if they're based in the UK, is not going to want to encounter you on this 3,000-mile trip. How do people engage with this program then, this ride? I mean, it is going to be quite monumental through this summer, isn't it? How long are you going to be taking? How long is that actually going to be?
I'm taking 3 months. So I start June the 5th in London, and I'm going up the east coast of England towards Scotland, around Scotland, back down the west coast to Wales, around Wales, and then the south coast of England, finishing on Saturday, the 2nd of September in London. How people can engage me is on my website. Is it okay if I share the URL?
Absolutely, yeah. And we'll put the links below. But say it for those who don't see the links.
Yep, it's katestrong.global/climatecycle. I'll be putting my route. And anyone's welcome to join me on the bike ride. Oh, 3,000 miles sounds a lot. But over 90 days, it's only 33 miles a day. So it's not that big a deal. And people can join me for part of it, some of it. I'm talking about the day, part of the day, some of the day, or over 3 or 4 days. Anybody's welcome, as well as to the project. So get involved, get curious, and hopefully get connected as well.
Brilliant. That's so much positive energy. We started off talking about resilience, but we've come out of it with, you know, thirst and hunger for life, which, you know, what a lovely, lovely way to sort of say it's the flip side of just being resilient. It's just, let's just enjoy this time that we've got. So thank you so much, Kate. It's been an absolute pleasure, as it always is. And hence, you're the only person to have achieved 3 hits on the Neil Wilkins podcast. Yay. So it's all great. Thanks so much for your time today, Kate.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Neil.